Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, we have a trio of leaders here at the 88th Masters. Scottie Scheffler, Max Homa, and Bryson DeChambeau all share the halfway lead at 6 under par, 2 shots ahead of Nicolai Højgaard. But Rex, that was not the story of this second round on Tuesday. If you folks thought Thursday was nasty at Augusta National, how about Friday? Scoring average was a shade over 75. That's a shot and a half harder than it was on Thursday, just a single round in the 60s. That was a 69 from rookie Ludvig Åberg, who is now in seventh place. Rex, there was so much sand that had blown out of the bunker on the 18th green that when balls hit it, like it looked like the green was top dressed, like you'd find at your local Muni. An absolutely wild day. Got to go down as the highest single round scoring average at the Masters since round 3 in 2016. What were your thoughts on the day?
It was brutal. And look, this was the win that we expected yesterday. These are the brutal conditions that we saw coming. And we saw how fast this golf course can dry out. We talk about it all the time, but this was it kind of in real time. This was it in practice, where yesterday they didn't get nearly the amount of rain that they expected to get. And today you saw what happens when that doesn't happen and the winds blow the way they did. I think my guess is the golf course was set up for speed yesterday. It was set up because they knew the conditions were going to be tough. And that's probably why we saw such lower scores. And so they moved to a little bit tougher pin hole locations today. And we end up with that wind, 25, 30 miles an hour gust. And it was always going to be tough. And even the players who were playing well, like it's one thing for a guy like, and we're going to go through the list of the players who missed the cut. It's one thing for Victor Hovland to struggle. He's been struggling all season long. Justin Thomas to struggle. I don't know that I had any other expectations for him, to be quite frank, this week. But when you see Bryson DeChambeau, who shot a 65 yesterday, when you see Scottie Scheffler, who has pretty much done everything he needs to this year to be a dominant world number one, when you see those players struggle, you know it's difficult.
I did not cover the 2007 Masters. I believe you did, but a lot of players like Phil Mickelson, who played that year, this tournament round sort of evoked memories of that. It was not quite that severe. If you recall, the third round scoring average in 2007 was 77.35. That was the year, of course, where Zach Johnson laid up on every single par five, and the winning score was 1 over par that year. It was not quite that dastardly on Friday. However, you did see sort of a similar effect where the leaderboard was shaken up pretty significantly. Maybe not the top of the leaderboard, but a lot of the contenders were turned into pretenders. Rory McIlroy now 10 shots back after 77. John Rahm now 11 shots back after 76. Hideki Matsuyama now 12 shots back. As you mentioned, Wyndham Clark, Victor Hovland, Brian Harman, Jordan Spieth, Sergio Garcia, Justin Thomas, Sam Burns, Dustin Johnson, all missing the cut. That then, Rex, leads me back to the top of the leaderboard. I mean, did this tournament just get a whole lot easier to win for the Scottie Schefflers, the Bryson DeChambeaus, and the Max Homas?
Oh, I don't think so, because you still have a lot of really good players on top of the leaderboard. And from a, you know, just a, we always want the chaos. We want the chaos and the content. In this particular case, I see nothing but chaos and content at the top. Can you imagine a scenario where, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but imagine you have a final twosome, but of Bryson DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler. Bryson DeChambeau, who is, for all, we can sit here and debate it, but he is an antagonist when it comes to LIV Golf, leaving the PGA Tour behind, all of the things that he has been outspoken about. On the other side, you have the guy who has been fixed with the white hat by the PGA Tour. You have the guy who they want to hang all their hopes on going forward as this is our player.
Is that not exactly what happened last year? Brooks Koepka, John Rahm going head-to-head?
It is. I think in retrospect, maybe it wasn't, now that John Rahm has joined LIV Golf. So I'd hate to play that card because, yeah, I don't want to. I don't want to reinvent history here. But
are you
saying
Scottie Scheffler, LIV Golf for 2025?
No, I'm not saying that.
That's an eventual outcome.
Because I think on this side, and look, John Rahm had clearly pledged his loyalty. I think you gave me what's ever wrong with your eye. He had pledged his loyalty to the PGA Tour, and then he joins LIV Golf. So I don't want to be a revisionist here, but clearly it's not what we thought. If we have that scenario on Sunday, it's going to be glorious. I think I saw some ratings the other day for ESPN just for round one, and they were up dramatically. I think that's what we we were expecting. That's what we were hoping, certainly. But you get the top players back together again. All of the narratives are out there that we have been missing, and that includes your Bryson DeChambeaus and your Scottie Schefflers and your Max Homas and everyone else who's on the leaderboard. You put them all back together, it's a compelling product.
Put them back together, it is a compelling product, and plus you have Tiger Woods playing deep into the night. They came off the golf course at about 8 p.m. Eastern time when the horn sounded to suspend play. I thought you were going to go a different direction. I actually do think the task was made a wholly easier on Friday by the events that took place, with Scottie Scheffler shooting even par, Bryson DeChambeau shooting just one over par to drop just one shot back, and Max Homa going one under par to tie the lead and now have a three-way tie at the top. The only time in Masters history that there was more than a six-shot deficit overcome at the halfway point was way back in 1956. So essentially, you can now look at the players who are even par or better and say that these are the players who have a chance to win the golf tournament. That is not many players, Rex. We're now down to just 14 players. We're now down to just 21 players who are within six shots of the lead. But you look at the caliber of the player, in particular, Scottie Scheffler, who is playing at sort of a level we have not seen in more than a decade. And I think that task is made wholly more difficult. It is going to be interesting, though, because the weather forecast for the remainder of the weekend looks spectacular, like Chamber of Commerce days. We're talking mid to upper 70s on Saturday with 70 to 15 miles an hour winds. On Sunday, going to be actually quite a bit warmer, mid 80s with light winds as well. The trajectory to me of this golf course is going to change. It certainly dried out over the past 2 days with the wind that we had, but I still think there's going to be birdie opportunities, certainly more birdie opportunities and scoreable chances than there were for the past couple of days. Let's break into these co-leaders, this trio of leaders that we have. Start with Bryson DeChambeau. We asked in the podcast on Thursday night, do you think this is sustainable? Do you think he'll drop back to the field? We cited the example in 2019. Where he opened with a 66 and ended up coming back with a 75 in round two. Didn't quite see that in very difficult conditions. And Bryson's still right there.
Yeah. And I think I said last night it was sustainable, because as we touched on last night, I think this is a different version of Bryson. And look, I'm still open to be proven wrong. I mean, we're just halfway in to what's going to be a demanding and grueling test. But even tonight, when he spoke with the media after his round, and he was over par, but as you pointed out, as you went through your stats early, most people were over par. There was only one round in the 60s. So I think, even though it probably didn't look good to him when he walked off the golf course, as he sits down tonight and he breaks down the numbers, as we know he's prone to do, he's probably going to realize that that was a pretty good round given the situation. And I think this is, as we touched on last night, a different version, Bryson 2.0, whatever it is you want to call him, because you always come up with cute nicknames for him. I just feel like he's more comfortable in his skin. I think he's going to be more patient, which is always going to be an important part of this particular test. But as you pointed out, he's up against the 400-pound gorilla, or whatever it is we want to call Scottie.
Bryson Scheffler was supposed to be the 400-pound gorilla.
He was supposed to, but he's not in the game right now. And Bryson was asked specifically about the idea of looking forward to going into the weekend, going head-to-head with Scottie. And he sort of broke the veneer a little bit and talked about the idea that, absolutely, like, look, the game is fractured. And I think about that a lot, that, you know, the things I left behind. And one of those things is getting to compete against the world's best players on a week in and week out basis. And this guy is clearly the world's best player at a moment. I think everyone is going to embrace the role. It seems to be an uphill climb. I'm not exactly on Steve Sands's side on this one, because Steve Sands asked us this morning, Friday morning, if this was over. And I think both of us had the same reaction. What do you mean, is it over? Are they going to call it after 36 holes?
Scottie was 3 hours away from beginning his second round.
Seemed premature. It seemed Sands like he was jumping the gun a little bit, Steven, or Sandy, as you like to call him on air. I don't think it's over, not by any stretch of the imagination. I think if you're picking, you're certainly going to look at Scottie Scheffler. If you're making me pick someone of those 21 players that you pointed out that are within the lead, I'm still going to go with Scottie Scheffler.
If you're asking me who do I feel more confident in, Scottie Scheffler or Bryson DeChambeau, I'd say Scottie Scheffler. If you ask me who I feel more confident in, Bryson DeChambeau or Max Homa, I would actually say Bryson DeChambeau at this point. He's leading the field in strokes gained off the tee. Right. Really has that crank driver dialed in, as he has had it dialed in over the past 8 or 9 months. And to me, this was the bigger challenge for Bryson, was over these past 2 days. Traditionally, historically, Bryson DeChambeau has not been a very good wind player. He hits absolute moon balls. And if he doesn't hit it perfectly on the screws, that ball is going to go all over the place. You saw the winds out there, Rex. 30, 35 miles an hour winds. He had immense control over his golf ball with these bold, rolled irons. I need to see him in person. I need to feel them to actually see what this actually means. But he seems very confident this is like the difference maker for him after he got approved by the USGA.
My explanation didn't do it.
Them in my hands and be like, that makes more sense now. He seems convinced now, though, that this is that any sort of off-center hits are going straighter, and that's a big difference.
Okay, and this was fun. When we were having this conversation, you were staring at a picture of his irons and trying to figure out what part was rounded, and you were pointing to the sole of the club going, this isn't rounded. And I said, well, that's not what he's referring to, and it's a bulge is what he talks about. So in theory, and this is a visual medium, I apologize to the audio audience for this, but I'm holding up my notebook, and this is a flat club face, which is normally what you have. In this particular case, however minutely, it's been bulged. So think of it like that. It's been rolled out. And so what you get on an off-center hit is less side spin. And you get an opportunity to not get that snap hook, which apparently he's been struggling with over the last couple of years, specifically on his driver, but it had worked its way down into the iron. So that's the basic concept. I'm sure if Bryson was sitting here, we'd be sitting here for another 30 minutes while he explained exactly what it is they do. But that's the basic concept. The interesting
part. This is his concept that he was bringing to the club manufacturer.
Well, and I think we need to be careful, because if you go back to Persimmon Woods, my understanding, and again, I am not a golf club expert. Please don't mistake me for E. Michael Johnson at Golf Digest or any of the other people in our industry who do a really, really good job. My understanding is the old Persimmon Woods way back in the day had a bit of a bulge to him. And the idea was to reduce the amount of side spin because the sweet spot on those were so small. They had never taken that concept and applied them to irons. And Bryson said he's been thinking about this, tinkering with the idea since 2020. He finally came up with a way to do it. And these are one of a kind 3D printed or three, 3D printed is the right way of saying it. That did not pass muster the first time around. Last Thursday, the USGA declared them non-conforming, not because of the bulge in the club face, in the face, but because the grooves were a little bit too sharp. So from what I was told by our colleague, Todd Lewis, that they spent the weekend essentially sanding those down. And I believe on Tuesday, the USGA finally gave him the green light to put him in play.
I mean, how do you not love Bryson? Bryson obviously tried to get them approved and conforming by the USGA standards last Thursday ahead of the LIV Golf event in Miami, trying to get a test run. Instead, he shows up at the year's first major, the biggest stage in the biggest showcase that this sport has, and puts in brand new irons that he's never used in competition. And here he is at the halfway point leading the Masters. I do not think he's going anywhere. I love the way that Bryson DeChambeau is playing right now. And I think his caddy, Greg Bodine, is doing a terrific job of keeping him patient and making sure he's making aggressive swings to conservative targets. This is not the Bryson that's just going flag hunting all recklessly. This is a player who actually has a very good approach. Rex, how about Max Homa, who has by far now the best position in a major championship career through 36 holes? He has just one top 10 finish in 15 career starts in the majors, which, of course, has never sort of computed since he's been one of the more prolific winners on the PGA Tour over the past couple of years, five wins since the 2020 season. And now here he is with the first realistic chance to win a major. What have you seen from Max, and what do you think his weekend will entail?
I don't think he was on either one of our radar, if I'm not mistaken, going into the week.
Wasn't playing well.
Wasn't playing well, and his record in the majors is awful. As you pointed out, this is his 18th major. He has exactly one top 10 finish. There's a lot of ways to break this down. In 18 major starts, he had just 8 rounds in the 60s. He's never shot back-to-back rounds in the 60s in a major. You can keep going on and on. They just were not his forte. I'm going to do this hit tonight on live from, but I'll go ahead and try it out right now. When you look at what when you look at what he does well, he does all the things, at least right now, that you would think would equate to success in the major championships. He's in the upper half of the field in putting. He's in the upper half of the field in strokes gained approach. All of the things that we feel like you need to do well, specifically on this golf course, on Augusta National, he does well. And as you pointed out, he's won on some really, really big stages. He's won at Quail Hollow, a major championship venue. He's won at Riviera, a major championship venue. Could keep going down the list. But his scoring average in this particular event was over 74 strokes. Like, he had just never played there before. So I kind of went to his swing coach, Mark Blackburn, and tried to understand exactly, give me the reason. I wanted him to convince me why I felt like that Max could go into the weekend with not just a good chance to win, but a really realistic chance to win. And he pointed out, number one, the only top 10 in the major was the last major he played. It was the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. And Mark said he learned there at that tournament. It's a lesson that most players learn a little bit earlier than Max did, but you don't have to be perfect to win a major. I think that's one of the key things that it takes a while for a lot of players to understand. Certainly you would put Max in that category, that if you just hang around, which is really, it's kind of insulting, but it's really what Tiger Woods did best in the majors throughout the entirety of his career. If you just hang around, you have kind of a good chance. And Mark also pointed out that the Ryder Cup was a huge stepping stone for him. That as bad as the American team played, he was by far the highlight of that team. And it kind of equates back to the President's Cup the year before at Quail Hollow, where suddenly he has put himself in these pressure situations and he's found a way to deliver. And that is equated to a much different attitude coming into this particular major championship. Because before, we know Max being Max, he was always going to question himself. In this particular case, I think there is a sense of self-belief and a sense of understanding that I don't have to be perfect, that what I have is good enough, that if I just go out and try to minimize my mistakes and think my way around the golf course, that he can do it. And I think that's the version that we're seeing right now versus the one we saw in the 17 previous major championships.
And that's exactly the angle. Well done. I think the viewers will love it if that is indeed your tryout for your live.
I need
from
to tighten it up, don't I? It's too long.
On Friday night, especially the ninth block. They're just not going to have time for that sort of rambling. But that is the angle, though, Rex, that they explored in a Homa column on NBCSports.com/golf. Max said that over the past year, he's really gotten into journaling. And one of the messages that he wrote earlier this week in advance of the Masters was, quote, "However good I am is however good I am." Essentially, that means he doesn't need to try to be better than he already is, you know, to remember that he is an immensely talented golfer, one of the best golfers on the planet. His week-to-week excellence on tour is kind of proof of that. So you just need to accept whatever comes next. And that has been very hard for a player like Max Homa, who his journey has been well documented, from being this hotshot amateur to a struggling pro to now one of the most marketable stars and one of the most prolific winners on the PGA Tour. But he can be insanely hard on himself, his harshest critic, kind of prone to a lot of negative self-talk. And his work with Julie Ellion, who's worked wonders with Wyndham Clark, the reigning U.S. Open champion, as well. We've seen sort of the proof of that over the past couple of years with Max Homa. So in Max's journal, he's certainly more forgiving. He's trying to jot down things that he's grateful for. And if he's looking for any sort of material, he had plenty of fodder that came from these past 36 holes alongside Tiger Woods. Second time in a major, he's played with him, and he put on an absolute show, shooting 67, 71, hitting all the shots. And to hear Tiger Woods say it, he said Max Homa has all the talent in the world. And so it'll be very interesting to see how he performs in this showcase. He is going to be in the final group on Saturday at the Masters, a situation he has never been in before. From a skill set standpoint, there's nothing keeping Max Homa from winning a major championship and kind of fulfilling all the promise that he had 15 years ago as a standout college player. But it is going to be something between the ears, you know, a mental battle to make sure that he's being as patient as possible and not trying to get it too far ahead of himself. How about Scotty, Rex? This is exactly what we expected from Scotty. Harsh winds, shoot 72, a little bit of a mistake on 13, hit a 3-iron into the creek, did not get so lucky on Friday as he did on Thursday, but nothing has deterred my thinking that he can win this major championship.
I think both of us are still so confident with Scotty that we did not wait to hear him talk before we did this podcast, which I think is kind of a testament to, I'm not quite sure he was going to say anything in there that was going to sway our minds one way or the other, that he is still the best player in the world by a long shot. And it was a good conversation this morning with your boy Sanzi on Live From, because even though he seemed to jump the gun a little bit on calling it over before he even teed off for his second round, he is by far the player to beat. He's the same guy that we were waiting for on Wednesday that we were talking about the favorites. He's in a tier by himself and everyone else is catching him. There is one thing that I will point out is going into the stretch that the longer he lets these other players hang around, the tougher it's going to be. Like, none of these have been easy. I'm not trying to, he makes some things, he makes it look easy sometimes when he wins, like he does what he did at Bay Hill. But the longer you let a player like a Bryson DeChambeau and even a Max Homa, even given his record at the majors, which we just talked at length about, if you keep giving them the belief that, oh, like, I'm only a shot back, or I'm tied for the lead, or whatever the case may be, it's going to be more and more difficult for him going down the stretch. And as we know, it's the beauty of Augusta. Crazy things happen on the second nine on Sunday at Augusta. And sometimes the best player doesn't win. We have seen it numerous times, especially at this event. So even though he is by far the runaway favorite still, and even more so now after two rounds than he was before we played any golf, there is a danger involved here that there are others who are right there.
I mean, just think of now the players that Scottie Scheffler has to beat. You know, Max Homa, again, as we just touched on, has never been in this position before in a major championship. Bryson DeChambeau, certainly not at this major championship, a golf course that has largely befuddled him over his career. Nicolai Højgaard, first-timer. Cam Davis has not played all that well in 2024. Kyle Morikawa has a decent history at Augusta National, had, I guess, an outside chance in 2022 and back toward the top five there. He hasn't really done anything there. Ludvig Åberg, I think, would be the player who actually should scare Scottie Scheffler the most, just four shots back, even in his first trip around Augusta National. He has proven in his very short pro career that he does have the goods. Other than that, I mean, it's players who are largely unproven in the major championships. That has to make Scottie Scheffler feel so much better, knowing that the Rorys, knowing that the Rahms, the Hovlands, the Spieths, the Hidekis, those are not the players who are closest to him and have an opportunity to chase him down over the weekend.
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I would take it a little bit deeper. I mean, Matthew Pavon has played really, really good golf this year.
But he's not Scottie Scheffler.
He is not Scottie Scheffler. There's no one on that board that's Scottie Scheffler. And I'd also want to point out that it was less than 20 minutes ago that we started taping this podcast. And right before that, you're staring at the leaderboard going, Xander's got a chance. Six strokes back. He's got a chance. So you're not going to touch on him at all.
I mean, Xander does have a chance. I thought he battled really nicely when it looked like he could go the opposite way coming in with his second consecutive round of 72. As I mentioned off the top when I had that kind of diarrhea of stats leading this podcast.
There's so many numbers.
21 players now within six shots of a lead. That is the magic number if you're looking to make a historic comeback on the weekend. That would match the most in the modern era. Rex, what's one thing that you're most looking forward to seeing on Saturday?
I want to see how the golf course shapes up. Yeah. Again, no other venue in golf can control the venue like they do here, whether if that's rain or if it's wind or the firmness of the conditions, whatever the case may be. They can dial up and get exactly what they want. Historically, Saturday has been one of the more difficult days. If you look at statistically over the years, that's kind of by design. They want to sort of weed out the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, and get the top players who are playing the best at the moment set up for a Sunday run. Because then on Sunday, especially on the second nine, they set it up for fun. They set it up for speed. We have birdies. We have eagles. We hear the roars. Like, that's kind of the winning formula. And more times than not, it works around here. So I am kind of curious to see, and you and I will be here early tomorrow morning for a 9:30 hit on Live From. I am curious to see what the course is going to look like first thing in the morning. I'm not quite sure it impacts the top three players, because I believe those three are pretty closely locked as far as how they're playing right now, their form, what they do best, what they can probably improve on over the course of the weekend. I think the course conditions will impact those who are chasing more than that. Those players that you just pointed out that are within six strokes of the lead. If you want to make up ground, if you're Xander Schauffele, for example, six shots back, you're going to have a heck of a round on Saturday to have any chance. And so I would expect at least one of those players to emerge from the pack and add their name to the mix.
Players have to be just praying for a reprieve at this point. I mean, the last 48 hours have been so demanding, so stressful, so chaotic. We heard Zach Johnson potentially giving an F-bomb to either himself or the patrons on 12. We saw Bryce DeChambeau carrying one of those little 30-pound signs over his shoulder. We've seen just some massive ejections. Spieth with a 79, Victor Hovland with an 81, Wyndham Clark shooting in the 40s on the back nine, J2 shooting in the 40s on the back nine. Like, these players just want calm conditions. Let's see some birdies. Let's see some excitement. I cannot wait especially with this leaderboard, the trio of leaders that we have here at the Masters. I think it's gonna be a great day.
And one final thought, Tiger Woods, who made the cut, grinded all day long. I don't think he's not going to put his name in the mix. Like, that's not what I'm going at here. And this was sort of my take this afternoon, with the idea that he had to play 23 holes today. And it was chilly this morning when he teed off, and it was chilly when he finished. It was a worst case scenario for Tiger Woods, for a guy whose body is so beat up that if you put him in a bad position, and I mean just sort of metaphorically more than physically, if you put him behind the eight ball in any way, he has a really, really hard time. We've seen it. I mean, this is the proof in the pudding over the last few years. And today, he grinded it out. It wasn't easy. You could tell. He made his 24th consecutive cut, which sets a new record here at the Masters Tournament. He breaks Freddie Couples' previous record. That's impressive. The really impressive part, though, was 23 holes, really, really difficult conditions, and he makes the cut.
I mean, all credit to him. 23 holes. He's got like a back patch on. He's rubbing icy hot. He's chomping away on his gum. His leg is clearly bothering him. His back is clearly bothering him. And to get in the house at one over par, just seven shots back, I guess, at the halfway point, is really a testament to his grit, to his perseverance, and to the talent that we've seen for the better part of the last quarter century. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys know the drill, nbcsports.com/golf for the latest news, notes, columns, and commentary from the Masters. We'll be back on Saturday night for the latest mini pod, and you guys can check us out 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time or so on live from the Masters on Saturday. Until then, enjoy the third round of the Masters. We'll talk to you on Saturday night.